This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Good morning, kia ora, and welcome to Free Left Turn, a left-wing perspective here on 89.0 Independent Community Media. Good morning, Mick.
Well, good morning, Craig. How are you?
I'm not too bad.
A bit of an echo today because Fred's away.
Yes, and he's away for legitimate reasons.
And he's off to Raglan and do a bit of flag raising, waving.
Yeah, wave the flag for the people of Palestine, the people of Lebanon, the people of Venezuela, the people of Cuba, the people of Iran, and the list goes on.
Yes, never ending, eh?
Never ending story. Yeah, like that movie, Never Ending Story. Yeah, I know. Just so many stuff, so much going on. And a lot of it is negative.
Yeah, I mean, I came across, we were talking before we came in here about the allegations made in public about Mr. Hipkins.
Yeah, well, that's what I put here. Don't air your dirty laundry on social media.
Yeah.
And I know that for a fact because it happened in my extended family when my nephew was having problems with his ex-partner's marriage, their marriage.
Right.
And that got aired in social media, and I thought, for goodness sake, don't put it there.
Right.
And so what happened was with old Chris Hipkins was that his ex-partner, who sounded to me like she was embittered, whatever.
Yeah.
Aired the personal details online. It was there only for a short time and then it was pulled off.
But it stays there, though.
The damage has been already done.
Yeah.
And then our beloved lamestream media, as I love to call them, ran with it. And I thought, well, haven't you people got anything else better to do? Like, are there more important issues of this country and the world going on currently, and you want to focus on that? How stupid is that? How unprofessional is that?
Infantile.
Yeah, infantile, crass, whatever you want to say.
And as you know, I was saying, had that been a national government figure or an ACT figure, that would the press would have run it?
We won't go there. And the one that brings this to mind is, did the media actually ask, once Mark Mitchell announced his fourth marriage, why did the other three fail? That could have been a potential pot of gold for them, but no, they won't go there.
I wonder why.
Oh, because he's a right winger.
Mm. And the press seems to...
Yeah, it seems to take look upon any dirty laundry in there. They tend to say, well, that we just won't go there.
Yeah, it's pretty disgusting, eh?
Oh, it's a disgraceful carry-on. So, yeah.
Because once upon a time, a politician's family was sacrosanct. He didn't go there.
Yeah, yeah.
If you had a gripe with a political figure, you had a gripe with a political figure. You didn't start
going to that
like tearing into the family. And I just feel sorry for the kids.
Yeah,
Hipkins, who are going to be public,
Yeah, but she put it there by being embittered and putting it there on social media, and then you have Kool-Aid drinkers like Chantelle Baker running with it. and she's not the only one.
Yeah.
Causing all sorts of stuff, and you get all the morons that come out of the woodwork with their disgusting, crass, infantile comments. Yeah, I think you leave your personal stuff, you leave it at home, basically.
Yeah,
you don't just go and air it out there. As you say, Mick stays out there.
Yeah,
And
of course, go after certain people who left the centre, they seem to be fair targets. Anyone who's a national act or New Zealand First, nothing to see here.
Yeah, it goes back to the days of, go back to the days of Colin Moyle.
Colin Moyle and Muldoon.
And allegations of homosexuality and the comment that Colin Moyle had an infantile laugh. And then there was Meritia Ture who got in trouble over the benefit stuff in the 90s.
Yeah.
She's a Green Party person. Yeah. And then you had the issues with Darren Hughes. And we know that Darren Hughes was openly gay, but hell, what happened in that story? They just ran with it, and they made mileage over it.
Mm.
Yeah. But when you have dirty little affairs amongst right-wingers, they seem to be not so well broadcast.
No.
Yeah.
Definite bias, don't you think?
Oh, yeah, it's bias one way. And it's just the... how unprofessional, how sleazy, how crass and how unprofessional our current lamestream media is.
Yeah.
They need to be reporting on the things that really matter, not this crap.
Yeah.
It reminds me of that song by Don Henley, Dirty Laundry.
Oh, yeah, Dirty Laundry,
The... the boys in the news say, mute them. What was it? The boys in the newsroom have got a running bet. Was one of the things. Waiting for the person to die, get the widow on the set.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those are the sorts of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Don Henley's song sums up our current media very well. Yeah.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Dirty Laundry. Yeah. 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 So, so that was disgraceful when I first heard it.
Yeah, it seems to be a worldwide thing, this. It's
crap sells news.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's basically it. And Hipkins was quite upset, when he was talking to the media. Yeah. I thought that probably of all the media lamestream types, so probably the ones that approached it the best was TV One, because they never harped on about it.
They just referred to it, did they?
They did refer to it. He made a conference... Benedict Collins commented on what Hipkins had said, and then there was Stuff News. I think they tried to avoid it, although they made references to the people who did broadcast it. So and there was an interesting cartoon that was put together. I don't know by whom, because there's no kind of title to it, but it was right-wingers clapping here.
Yeah.
And representatives of the media trying to do a limbo dance under a stick that's probably about one foot above the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, over this whole issue. It just shows them. It just shows them as they are. Yeah. So yeah. Yeah. What I put here, and the illegal war continues.
Yep.
Yeah, so that was, in saying that...
We're coming up, 3 weeks now, isn't it?
Yeah, now 3 weeks...
tomorrow our time.
Or
3 weeks.
Or this evening our time, yeah.
Our time, yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember I was watching Al Jazeera on Saturday, that's a particular Saturday, and they usually do a documentary where they talk to... particular immigrants who've gone to a certain place and how they're trying to get through the system. I forget the name of it. And that didn't show. They just showed this news, breaking news.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So 3 weeks this evening.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened? Well, Iran haven't surrendered. They're still bombing... countries who have decided that they'll get into bed with the USA by allowing them to have military bases there. And there's been bombings of gas fields and stuff like that of Iran, so-called infrastructure, and I say that, so-called infrastructure.
Well, we don't really have a plan, do we?
Yeah, no, we don't have a plan. I think the smallest percentage may be military infrastructure, but a lot of it's civilian infrastructure.
That'd be a good point.
Yeah. And so that's exactly what the Zionist state did in Gaza, is exactly what they're doing in Lebanon. They're not, they'll say, oh, we were after Hamas fighters because they were in that building, but it doesn't matter that there was one Hamas fighter and the other 1,000 residents were civilians.
Yeah.
We'll just bomb it. And it's exactly what they're doing in Beirut. They're bombing targets because they thought, oh, there's a Hezbollah mastermind in that building, but that doesn't matter if another 500 Lebanese are just living there as civilians.
Yeah.
We'll just kill them anyway.
Yeah, well, that's the rhetoric coming out of the United States. Old Iran's the evil because they're bombing civilian targets, but you guys are doing the same thing.
Well, the USA has been evil since when? Since the end of the Second World War.
Yeah.
What they've done. You can just line up all the countries where they've interfered and where they've done some form of military action and the innocents have been killed.
Yeah.
So that's a sign of an evil evil empire, and the mechanisms they use to overthrow legitimately elected governments.
Yeah.
That's a sign of an evil evil empire. The Zionist state is indulging in the same thing. That's a sign of another evil little empire.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're indulging in the killing of... They all have this big disguise. They say, oh, it's all military. These are terrorists and all that sort of stuff. You're just exactly the bloody same.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, war does involve civilian casualties.
It was in the Second World War, we know that.
Yeah.
And also in the First World War, we also know that. But I think the deliberate targeting of people...
That's what, because there's some lounges there. The Americans and the Israelis are going to investigate hitting that school.
Yeah, it'd be
and the result will be, oh no, it was legitimate. Blah blah blah.
Oh yeah, but that whole school argument, yeah. Mick, was around who fired the tomahawk, and Trump made this incoherent babble that it was a misfired Iranian missile, but they came to the final analysis was who's the only country who has tomahawks? The USA. The problem was with this school was their logistics, the maps and stuff weren't updated to match it. The school, the military had moved. They actually put a school there, and the military part of it had moved that way.
But the Americans were working on maps outdated, thinking the installation was still there.
We've heard that story before.
Yeah.
Outdated logistics. Yeah, right. You kill those people, you fess
very
up to it.
Very convenient, isn't it?
You fess up to it. But I see that old Hexeth will go on some sort of tirade. Oh, it was them. Or it was, our allies should be supporting us in this. No, why should we? Why should we?
No, it's just a cluster.
Yeah, there's a major one. It's just gone on and on and on.
Yeah.
And there's no resolution to it. And then Trump has the nerve to call for his NATO allies, and I think I would use that very loosely now, of being cowards because they're not going to support this naval action of guiding all tankers through the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
So he calls them cowards. But Mr. Trump is the prominent coward. That all goes back to dodging the Vietnam draft over this bone spurs thing matter.
And Lindsey Graham.
Lindsey Graham, another warmonger and probably another draft dodger.
Yeah.
He may not have been, he might have just legitimately missed the draft, but he could have volunteered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you see, you mentioned that some of the countries that, there's an article in Wednesday's Herald. Allies push back on Hormuz demand, saying no to Donald Trump can be a dangerous game, as Prime Minister Sir Keir Starmer's finding out. But Germany is no longer mincing words with the US President's demand for help from NATO allies in Iran, given short shrift by Berlin. This war has nothing to do with NATO, Friedrich Merz spokesman declared emphatically. To Trump's request for allies to secure the Strait of Hormuz. It is not NATO's war. It is not our war. We did not start it, added Boris Pistorius, the German defence minister. So Trump's been busy attacking these countries. Japan, Australia, Poland, Spain, Greece, Sweden also distanced themselves from any military involvement in the Strait of Hormuz.
Yeah.
And EU foreign ministers discussed the war yesterday. That would have been Tuesday their time. EU foreign ministers discussed the war yesterday but showed no appetite for extending their Red Sea naval mission to help reopen the Hormuz, the bloc's top diplomat said.
That's what they've been saying. That's what those countries have been saying. But on the other side of that page is some of the language is about the retaliatory action of the Islamic Republic.
Yeah.
And Starmer was a classic example of one person who was jumping up and down about it. Oh, they shouldn't be doing that. We've got to protect our interests. Well, sorry, but I think the UK involved themselves when they allowed, when they used their spying facilities on Cyprus to spy on potential Hamas targets on the Bahar, and they did, and they gave that information to the Zionist state.
Yep.
So they've involved themselves in that part of it.
And the Israelis were not allowed to defend themselves.
And that's what a lot of people have been saying. That's on the social media side of things. Yeah, they had every right to defend themselves. They were being attacked.
Yeah.
What would you do?
Exactly.
And then because this is a second attack.
Yes.
Last year. A legal attack. So we're not going to be burnt a third time. So we're just going to go, we warned you. I think they did. They warned you that if you go after us, we'll go after your targets in the Middle East.
Yeah.
So I think that writing was on the wall. They just chose on that. They won't fight back. They damn well did.
Yeah. And they seem to misunderstand the Iranian. I mean, I'm no supporter of the Iranian government.
Nor am I.
But structurally, organisation-wise, they said, look, you take one individual, another individual steps up.
It's layered.
Yeah.
It's layered. So unlike the United States, which has where you pick your sycophants to fill in important positions, e.g. the Trump administration, you have people probably who are probably experts in those areas.
Yeah.
As opposed to the Trump administration, where you have idiots in important positions.
Yeah.
To be frank.
Yeah, so don't underestimate, whatever you think of them, you shouldn't never underestimate Iranians. They're not stupid.
Yeah, you never underestimate your enemies. Like the Romans in days gone by made a big mistake going in there with their army. I think it was Crassus or one of those people.
Yeah, thought they could walk in and...
Yeah, walk in and do whatever, but they got slaughtered to a man.
Mm.
Yeah, so just be careful what you wish for.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You mentioned, sort of going back slightly to politics. Who could be national? This is written by Audrey Young, who's a senior political correspondent based at Parliament. This is an opinion piece based at Parliament and specialises in writing about political power. And the headline reads, Life After Luxem, Who Could Be National's Next Leader? And she's got Mark Mitchell. She's got him listed as a... He is an emergency option only. That's a ringing endorsement, isn't it? The one who might be called upon if the other two fought their way into a state of paralysis. His role as emergency management minister has allowed him to look, sound and act with decisiveness and empathy. I think she's been slightly ironic. He, along with Justice Minister Paul Goldsmith, has done well on law and order in his form. He put his hand up to compete against Simon Bridges for the leadership in 2018, but then withdrew. He stood against Judith Collins in 2020 when Todd Muller suddenly resigned. She also lists Chris Bishop. Chris Bishop has more urgency to seek the leadership because he's at risk of being tipped out of his marginal Hutt South seat, and he might not get a list place that's winnable under poor polling.
Let's hope for a miracle there.
Yeah, and then Erica Stanford has time. She has a safe seat in East Coast Bays, and whether or not National wins or loses the election, she has a chance to become its leader next term. If Luxem manages to hold on as Prime Minister through, and possibly because of the current global crisis, he still may not last in the leadership beyond a year. His problems are not likely to go away. If Bishop and possibly Willis are wiped out in a poor election result, but the party retained power, the leadership could still be ripe for taking by Stanford.
They're all right-wing drongos as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I've got no time for them.
No, I'm talking about Luxem. I couldn't believe he's been made an honorary Matai chief. I thought the paper before was, oh, no, I'm not asking for a Matai honour,
I
thought, yes, you did. what if you hadn't, why would you mention the Hitler? But then he's been rewarded by people who obviously think on his same wavelength as well. It's the part of the club, isn't it?
Well, I think the problem with the some of those Pacific nations is their fundamental Christian nonsense.
Mm.
And they're the ones that would be the cheer squads for what's going on currently in the Middle East.
It seems like a lot of South Pacific nations are right behind Israel.
Be careful what you wish for.
Very careful.
Yeah, because what we spoke off air, Mick and myself, and I mentioned an episode of Double Down News. I'd like to know the name of the presenter for that one.
Is this fairly recently, is it?
Yeah, it was last weekend. Right. And it was to do with what was going on, where they were holding Palestinian prisoners at those concentration camps, and there was quite some scary stuff. There was a alleged sodomising of a particular prisoner, and there was just a blurry images of it.
There's been several reports of those sorts of things.
Yeah, those sorts of things. And he actually spoke to a person
who had been a victim.
He had been a victim of a serious beating, sodomising and stuff like that.
Gee.
And he was... he talked about a person who he heard was being beaten to death. And he spoke to this reporter. So that made me think. So with that kind of activity going on, and given the when that kind of stories came out, there was they sent in an investigation. The Zionist state sent in an investigation, and people got under arms. They shouldn't be doing that to our military. They were.
They were protesting about their soldiers.
Oh, they're not like that. And that was Gevier and all those sort of half-baked barbarians. So that made me think, the Zionist state go on about this thing about the chosen people. And this is where these Christian fundamentalists hook into it, right? They hook into that sort of stuff as well. But given what you hear, like that, the killing of civilians and all this stuff, are they more suited to the inheritors of Sodom and Gomorrah from the Bible? And everybody has this image about Sodom and Gomorrah
The wrath of God. And,
yeah, that being the...
and turning into pillar of salt for looking back.
Yeah, that's Lot's wife, yeah. So that's where all that sort of comes into play. But the... given the sort of den of iniquity and that sort of stuff, they think there's a lot of sexual practices that weren't deemed to be normal. I think the issue they had with Sodom and Gomorrah was that it wasn't. I think that it was to do with their lack of hospitality.
Right.
I think that was a bigger thing that
towards another.
Yeah, they had no hospitality for their neighbours and all visitors and stuff like that. So I think that was part of the story. Okay. Yeah.
Fast forward to the 21st century.
So that's why I believe that's what they're really the inheritors of, not the chosen people. So all these fundamental Christians out of the United States, the Pacific Islands, you be careful what you wish for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And to me, they don't strike me as Christian. I mean, I always thought Christian was supposed to be a message of love and acceptance and...
All that sort of, that's what it is. You accept...
You accept the differences, you focus on what you have in common.
Yeah. If the person's a Muslim, okay, then we'll try and say what do things do commonality. What we agree on, okay, I may differ about certain things, but at least I can talk to you.
Mm.
Well, and that's the same with somebody with a disability, somebody who's openly gay, somebody who maybe even a hermit. we've got to find out what the commonality is. We're not. We don't have to worry about so much of the point of difference.
No, we need to. Yeah, if people look carefully, there's more similarities and differences.
Yeah, well, there are. Yeah, there are. Yeah,
basic ones: food, shelter, you know, all those material things of life. Blah blah blah.
Yeah, and this is how you sort out your problems politically, internationally. You don't go and start an illegal war.
No.
You could have actually been able to talk to the Iranians in a civilised manner.
Well, why would the Iranians trust the Americans?
No, they won't trust them now. Twice now,
in negotiations, they've been attacked.
And they're not trusted because they keep repeating these AI-type snippets, or call them reels, and they always refer back to why do the Iranians not trust the United States? They always refer to 1953. It always goes back to there.
Yeah, yeah.
It always goes back to that point. And I think that they don't trust the British as well. It goes back to that point. So we need to... We're not moving forward on this.
No, going backwards.
We're just entrenching what we already know, that they don't bloody like you.
Yeah.
Burn your bloody flag. I hate this. Went to this place in the base with Margaret when I was on leave, and it has all these flags from these different nations,
with the exception of
there'd be other nations. Right. I couldn't tell you what was it.
I thought it might have been two key flags might have been a missing from.
Oh. Is that an opportunity to buy a US flag and burn it?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, can't go there.
Yeah.
Can't go there. But I was just looking for
something. The Americans don't understand why they hate it. They don't understand why do they hate us, despite the fact what they've done to them.
Yeah, well, that's what history's for.
Yeah.
It tells you why they hate you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a bit like just wiping history away and sort of sanitising it. This is what the current government has done with history in schools.
Oh, it's revisionist, isn't it?
It's sanitised. We won't talk about why there were land wars here.
Or slavery or whatever.
But we'll just kind of make history a multi thing. Like we'll talk about the French Revolution, for example, and we'll talk about World War II, for example, and then we might talk a little bit about the medieval days or the Roman Empire.
But nothing too close to home.
Nothing too close to home, which may kind of paint us in a bad light and influence young minds.
It does beg a belief, eh? I mean, sometimes I've had to switch the news off or put it on mute because I just can't stand listening to this diatribe of garbage.
Yeah. Margaret asked me, "Are you going to watch the news?" I say, my comeback point is, what time is tea being served? And she'll say a certain time. I'll just watch something on YouTube for the time being. Mm. And then yesterday was quite a good plan for me because I just watched the delayed game between the White Ferns and the South African ladies here. So that was it. I just watched I already knew who won.
Showing my ignorance here. Was that cricket or something?
Cricket, yeah. It was at Eden Park yesterday afternoon. So I just watched the delayed thing. I didn't want to watch the bloody news. Well, there's nothing there that will inspire me to say, that's a good story. They are truly trying to save that particular bird, are they? Hmm. Or they're trying to fix up this historical building, or they're trying to make this community more inclusive. Man, nothing like that. And there's about bloody war and about our 0.2% economic upsurge.
Oh, GDP.
Yeah, that.
Into the pockets of the few.
And going on about what happens in Chris Hipkins' former private life. Yeah. I don't want to know that sort of stuff. I want to know something that's going to encourage me.
That would come under the heading. It used to be under the heading of the gutter press.
Yeah, it is, and it still is. It still had that name. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah. The other one I wrote down, Mick, was electricity problems in Cuba.
Yes.
And I put here the impact of illegal US sanctions. Mm. Yeah. Because we know there was a tanker of fuel that was supposed to have...
Of Venezuela.
But the USA committed an act of
piracy,
an illegal act of piracy on the high seas, and stole that oil.
Yeah.
And I think they stole another oil tanker as well. So because of the lack of fuel, there have been blackouts in Cuba.
And there's no cabs, so people are resorting to bicycles.
Yeah, and the
impact on hospitals, you know, for all that sort of stuff.
And then the fool in the White House is demanding that, what was his name, Miguel Canal, the leader of Cuba, current leader of Cuba, step down so we can just take over the place.
Yeah.
I don't know if that will be coming. I don't think that will be coming very soon, but you never know with that incoherent fool. But
yeah, they've got Cuba in their sights, so.
Yeah, they've got them in their sights. But there is a flotilla of people going to Cuba, because I'm not too sure how basically the sanctions actually were, how Cuba's blockaded by the USA, because to the south there are nations like Jamaica and stuff like that. But they said there's going to be one there that's supposed to be arriving like today, the 21st.
When you say flotilla, is this U.S. vessels?
No, these are people who are...
humanitarian?
Humanitarians. There were people mentioned in relation to this. I think Greta Thunberg could be one of those people on that ship, but there could be a variety of ships. I know that Spain talked about humanitarian aid to Cuba, and I think Mexico did as well.
Wow, good on them.
Yeah,
I feel sorry for the Cuban people, eh? There's nothing but crap from 1959 onwards.
Illegal sanctions, too, because it's always been brought up in the UN about these sanctions being illegal. No matter what they do, the USA and its sycophants will block it.
I think Rubio actually denied that they would put sanctions on medical supplies to Cuba. He actually said, "Oh, it's the Cubans themselves who put in sanctions on medical supplies," which doesn't make a heck of a lot of sense.
It doesn't.
This is a country who had to come up with their own COVID vaccine because the companies that were going to were told to back off
by those idiots in Washington. Yeah.
But the Cubans, they're remarkably resourceful.
Oh yeah, they are. So the certain African nations got a lot of time for Cuba.
Of course, Cuba spent a lot of medical brigades out that way.
Yeah, and their literacy drive.
Yeah.
As well, they came here, and showed us up, much to the disgust of Rodney Hyde. I don't care about what he said, but they came here because we have literacy issues here too. So they came out by that literacy drive.
They're very clever people, eh? They're resourceful.
And they actually sent a team in when they had the disaster in the southern United States, Katrina.
Oh right,
yeah, they sent an aid in there.
Never acknowledged by the United States?
Oh, I suspect not. So that's what's happening currently. I suspect that if it's blockade, it can't be blockaded all the way around.
Britain involved, because that's old former colonial territory for Britain.
Spanish territory.
Yeah, but you said further south is Jamaica.
And all those former colonies.
British Caribbean territory, or former territories.
Yeah, you're talking about Barbados, Jamaica.
Barbados.
Yeah, Leeward Islands, Woodward Islands stuff.
Well, good on them for trying attempting to
break
the blockade.
They said that one ship had already got there, but I'm not too sure how that. But I see, given that the US eyes are focusing mainly on the Middle East, maybe just a bit of a just sneak through the back door and get it in.
I don't know.
The cognitive
The orange man.
Yeah, deficient one is trying to overthrow the current regime. And they'll be better under us. Well, why did Castro come to power in the first place?
Yeah,
because the US backed Batista government was cruel.
It's happened time and time again.
Yeah.
Throughout the history, they back the absolute utter so and so's, right wing dictators who are cruel to their own people. But the Americans say, "Oh, well, we can do business with these people."
Yeah,
it's happened. Yeah, time and time again.
Yeah, what did I see? I saw on It's one of these AI real things, but a lot of it's kind of near the truth, although there's question marks over it. I want to tell you why I have question marks over some of the stuff they put.
Right.
But they spoke about a program that was done in Puerto Rico in the early 30s about the sterilization of women.
Yeah.
So they could don't produce more children and make them more to work in their bloody industries there.
Mm. They did the same thing in India.
Yeah.
Because people were suddenly worrying about the demographics, that Europeans weren't replacing themselves.
Yeah, but this was more to do with US manufacturers inside Puerto Rico.
Yeah, because they were encouraging full sterilizations in India.
Jesus.
So it's not new, unfortunately.
Mm. I know.
These sort of programs have been up and running, come back again.
Yeah, they mentioned the Roosevelt administration, but the dates didn't seem to fit the model because it kind of fitted around the time of old Herbert Hoover, which is Herbert Hoover's years, as opposed to Roosevelt's years.
When did Roosevelt get to become president? 33, was it?
He won the election at the end of 1932 and came into power in 1933.
Right.
Hoover
was his predecessor. Wasn't
it? Yeah, he was voted into power in 1928 and lost the 1932 election.
So right.
He was a Republican. So yeah. So I think it was an interesting little thing. I've never actually heard of it before. So. They do put some snippets that I just check up on. And a reason why I checked on one of them was, this is to do with the Knights Templar and how Philip the Fourth, he was king of France, he wanted to get his hands on their wealth. That's what it was. So they were, the Templars were accused of all sorts of things and burnt at the stake. And the Grand Master had said, while he was bloody being burnt alive, that you, Philip the Fair, and the Pope who supported Philip, Clement, I think his name was, you would be dead within a year.
And were they?
They were, and they were dead within a year. The Pope, I think, died of a stroke, and he died of something.
Mm.
And Philip the Fair died of a hemorrhage, even though they said he died in a hunting accident, but he died of a cerebral hemorrhage. So they were all dead within a year.
Yeah, because they did it because they run up so much debt with the Knights Templar. Because French monarchs were borrowing huge sums of money to fight in their wars or...
Yeah, or whatever, crusade stuff.
Crusade stuff, and they couldn't pay, so they decided, oh, we'll get rid of them and we'll clear the debt.
Yeah, they just killed off the Grand Master and whatever else, and they were all burnt at the stake.
Yeah, horrible way to go.
Yeah, you had this AI image of the Grand Master pointing to the king.
Yeah.
Hand on fire, yeah. But that's all AI, so yeah. Take it or leave it. So the electrical problems in Cuba, because they would tend to be the recipients of Venezuelan oil. Yeah. So that's the Venezuelan.
It's going to seriously impact on Cubans' way of life, health.
Yeah.
Sort of stuff.
Yeah. So they. I don't know which way that will go. They'll blame the government, but then again, if you may have indoctrinated your people enough, you might say, the reason why this is happening is because of sanctions, and they're illegal by the USA because they got their knickers in a twist over being kicked out in the 50s and the failed Bay of Pigs operation.
Yeah, fiasco.
There's some missiles or whatever they call it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, then we hear about a economic growth of 0.2%. And you said GDP before.
Yeah.
And I think that's a kind of all gloating about it.
They're so desperate for positive news that they highlighted 0.92%.
Yeah, it's a joke about giving Viagra to a dead man.
Yeah.
that's how exciting that is.
Well, I hope they don't squander the game because you've got things are going on in the world and gasoline prices and
and we can get to that very shortly.
Yeah.
But the thing that also caught my eye about a 0% increase is the rise in the minimum wage.
All right.
0%.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. that's kind of matched by the 0% in the minimum wage, that whole economic growth.
Yeah, and so they're patting themselves on the back.
Well, over nothing. And that brings us to a very important point of with this war, illegal war, is the electric vehicles.
Yeah.
You got something quite good there.
Yeah, this is an opinion piece written by Ed Harvey, who is a New Zealand energy expert and founder of EV smart charger manufacturer Evnex. And I won't go through the entire article but it says he opens up with, "We're paying the price for going cheap. When the government removed the clean car discount in 2023, the message to New Zealand car buyers was straightforward. Electric vehicles are too expensive and we're making it easier to buy something cheaper. It worked. EV sales fell off a cliff from more than 26,000 in 2023 to around 9,000 in last year. Hundreds of thousands of New Zealanders bought petrol and diesel cars instead, but the fall in sales wasn't driven by the subsidy removal. It was also the clear signal from the government we're not interested in supporting electrification. The Middle East crisis has just presented the bill. Yeah. As conflict in the Gulf escalates and the Strait of Hormuz sits effectively closed, New Zealanders are paying for National's decision with higher petrol prices at the pump. The market has already noticed second-hand EV inquiries have surged within days of the conflict escalating. Consumers understand the maths, even when policy and politicians don't.
Or don't want to.
The sticker price is only a small part of owning a vehicle. I'm not quite sure what they mean by sticker price. I presume the price that's put on a vehicle, but New Zealanders keep their cars for, on average, 14 years on the road.
Mm-hmm.
A petrol car bought today will be filling up and exposed to every oil market shock well into the 2030s. EV charged at home costs a fraction of a petrol car per kilometre travel. The government's pitch was that removing incentives would save Kiwis money, when what it actually did was shift the cost from the showroom floor to the petrol station, paid over years and decades, now magnified by an international conflict. It is not saving money. It is simply deferring the true cost over a long time, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
It's funny that that's only been picked up as an opinion piece, eh?
Go with that one.
Yeah, it's funny this has been picked up by an opinion piece and it's from an Ed Harvey, as you said, and you said who he represents.
Yeah.
And I would want to know what the mainstream media are putting in the main part of the news.
Mm.
But I don't think I've heard anything.
No.
It's gone very quiet on that front.
Yeah, I think that was the second article there. Oh, the second article. Energy independence, not LNG. This is an opinion piece written by Gary Taylor, who's the chief executive of the Environmental Defence Society, and he opens his comment with, "The government's proposal to import LNG is nonsensical. A rational consideration of global supply disruption and price hikes for LNG, particularly over the last week," this was written in Monday, March the 16th.
Yeah.
Reinforces the need for New Zealand to drive hard towards energy independence, which was what the previous article kind of alluded to.
Yeah, yeah. So,
unlike many countries in the world, we have natural resources to achieve that. We just need a government that thinks straight and is not really fixated on tired market solutions.
Like National and ACT and their partner New Zealand First. Because basically when part of that illegal war, part of that illegal war, they bombed that the LPG facility there, didn't they?
Yeah. And they say, well, he goes on, it says there are a number of reasons to avoid LNG
LPG.
Imports. The most salient is that it makes no sense to import our own gas as low-value methanol and import high-cost gas as LNG at the expense of electricity consumers. Doing it through the same port brings this industry into even starker relief.
He's not mincing his words, is he?
No, he's not mucking about at all.
Yeah, it basically shows how short-sighted these petrol-loving fossil fuel types are.
Lobby groups have been pushing this.
Yeah, and now they've been made to look right burks, aren't they?
Yeah.
over this whole issue. We can have the electric vehicles, and they may cost a lot because of some of the stuff that's involved, but it's a cleaner form of energy. You could look at things like hydrogen vehicles, for example. Water, vehicles powered by water, for example, is another alternative.
Well, that was mooted, back in the early 20th century, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And they bought the oil companies concerned, bought the patents and quietly put them on the shelves.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I think this is... this person is rather blunt. Probably given that he represents the Environmental Defence Society, would probably prove his... prickliness, I would say.
Because this spills over and the cost of everything going up.
Yeah.
And going on. And there's a very good Rod Emerson cartoon where it shows a customer in a supermarket called Duopoly.
Mm-hmm.
And she's at the meat counter and he's got an array of meats. It's got mince, POA, POA, lamb, don't ask, eye, fillet, arm and a leg, pork, ha ha, those are the prices. And the customer says, I guess the Iran war is responsible for these outrageous prices. And the guy behind the counter responds, they're still workshopping that excuse. It's just plain old greedflation.
It is. It is greed. I can say that again.
And this spills over into the infrastructure, but you and I and Fred have talked about on previous occasions. And this is Jeff Cooper, who's the chief executive of the New Zealand Infrastructure Commission. And this is an opinion piece, and his headlines read: "The approach that can solve NZ's infrastructure problems." New Zealand has an infrastructure problem. For decades, we have built in response to short-term pressures rather than planning for the future. Investment has followed crises, electoral cycles or headline projects rather than a consistent system-wide view of what the country requires. Frequently, the result is worn-out infrastructure and uneven investment. These pressures only get worse. Our population is aging. Central and local government are facing financial constraints. Productivity growth is flat. And natural hazards, as 2026 has already made clear, are becoming more frequent and severe. And so we've been keeping good company as far as our condemnation for the lack of foresight.
You know, long-term vision, you can think, well, infrastructure is one of those things that fits in within that model of a long-term vision. You're not going to think to the next election cycle or the one after that, or even the one after that. You need to be thinking 50 to 100 years
ahead. Five decades, 10 decades.
Yeah, 50 to 100 years ahead of what's going to happen with all these things like the population growth, ageing of population.
And demand of resources.
And all that sort of stuff.
Because he says here, at the same time, our water networks, hospitals, defence estate and other infrastructure assets are visibly under the strain of deferred maintenance. The numbers are unequivocal. We cannot fund everything at once. The National Infrastructure Pipeline includes nearly 12,000 projects in planning, valued at $275 billion as of September last year. Over two-thirds of total project value of $193 billion remains without full funding commitments, largely driven by a small number of mega projects.
Yeah.
The recently released National Infrastructure Plan makes it clear, looking after what we already have, is our largest challenge. Over the next 30 years, the cost to replace our existing infrastructure will average around $20 billion a year.
So the long-term vision for me would be, say, if you built a road, you have to have a starting point for your long-term vision.
Yeah.
A government that's competent and all that sort of stuff and has full of people with merit would say, well, we're at this point here. We need to think what it would be like 100 years from now.
Yeah. Population,
will that road that has taken, say, 5 years to complete, will it be fit for purpose in the next 50 or 25 to 50?
Well, we're struggling now.
We're
struggling with some of the roads.
So it has to be a far more vision-focused.
Especially when this government wants to encourage more immigrants.
Yeah.
And I've got nothing wrong, I've got nothing against
it. No, it's just...
But it's the lack of infrastructure, the lack of long-term planning.
You need to plan... You need to have your infrastructure there. It's like when you develop a suburb, for example, you've got to put on all the groundwork, like the
services. All the services,
sewage, water, whatever.
Yeah.
Before you build the bloody houses.
Mm.
Before you move the people in.
Yeah.
So it's the same with the infrastructure, stuff like this. You've got to make sure that we'll have the right number of schools for this area, or we'll have the right number of doing another hospital here.
Yeah, but if you've got an increase in population, you've got an increase in traffic.
Yeah, and all that sort of stuff. That will take. Or should we be moving away from fossil fuel driven vehicles to potentially having more emphasis on public transport that's been operated on a clean energy, for example?
A couple of times I come into town during the week, and at 8:30, it's gridlock over the Hamilton East Bridge.
So that's a short. That's a result.
And most of the vehicles only got one person in them. If the public transport system was better than it is, it's not bad now, but it could be. If you can encourage people to use public transport, it was reliable and convenient.
Incentivize it.
The volume of traffic and the snarl ups would reduce surely.
You need to incentivise people to use public transport.
And we're not getting it from this government.
No, they're short-sighted. Probably like other governments, previous governments.
Yeah, they're not alone in this.
Yeah, no. Yeah, but clearly the more years down the track we move, and the infrastructure doesn't really kind of change.
And it doesn't get any cheaper.
It becomes tired. It looks horrible. It needs to be replaced.
And the costs involved in trying to make... And it's not going to go down in price.
You need to be moving... Things need to be moving all the time. They need to be moving all the time. I mean, they've just been moving all the time. They're not just... You build the thing and that's it. We won't do anything. We need to be moving all the time.
See, why can't you... They have partially complete a piece of infrastructure, but then it's earmarked, in such and such time we need to extend
or widen it
whatever, but get the basics there so you can build on it and expand and
they used to have these things called, I think paper roads used to be part of that sort of stuff, paper roads.
But make a projection, use is X amount, in 10 years it could be Y.
But
there doesn't seem to be any long-term planning, as we've discussed.
And then they cry and grizzle about the cost of how much it's going to take. Well,
the longer you put it off, the dearer it's going to cost.
Yeah, and future generations will have to wear it.
Yeah.
And they'll blame us for not doing anything about it.
Yeah.
But I think the emphasis on roads only... as an essential infrastructure.
It's faulty, eh?
Faulty, yeah. You need to be thinking, well, we need...
Railways, why can't it... Railways.
Railways, for example, you may need to say, need to move stuff by sea, for example. So upgrading ports in different places, for example.
Yeah. Well, that leads to the next, next thing. This is Thursday's Times. The headline reads, Blunder Reveals Hidden Costs. Second headline reads, internal documents show procurement costs and logistical doubts needed to have ferries running. The new Cook Strait ferries are officially priced at $596 million. Now, I'm not sure if that's for two or each, because it doesn't read well. But internal figures show the total could reach $716 million once delivery costs, contingency and exchange rates are included. Treasury has also warned the overall program has just $31 million of headroom before breaching the government's $2 billion funding cap, raising fears of cost overruns. There's a surprise. Ferry Holdings, the Crown company buying the ships, is the public figure announced by Rail Minister Winston Peters in November, covers only the ship contracts themselves, with the expected cost overruns built into the wider programme budget. The assessments came to light in November 25. Ferry Holdings Limited briefing, it was released online last week, following an official Information Act request, but heavily redacted. However, once posted on social media, the reductions were easily removed, prompting FAHL to take the document offline on Saturday. The briefing is dated November 11th. 8 days later, Peters publicly cited a $596 million fixed-price contract for two new ferries from the Guangzhou shipyard. However, the internal briefings reveals the procurement cost is $715.9 million. The $596 million figure represents only the core ship contracts price at anticipated exchange rates. The internal total of 715.9 million factors in an additional 120 million for contingency, exchange rates and other delivery costs, etc., etc.
That's all part of it. And that's just another example of a limited vision, isn't it?
I think you should allude to like port facilities.
Yeah, you
have. They want local governments. Let's see if I can find it. Mentions. I can't find it, damn it. Mentions two port authorities down there somewhere. Oh, port, there we go. At the time of briefing, negotiations with Port Marlborough and Centre Port were ongoing, with final deals not expected until mid 2026.
They wanted them. The IREX deal was wanting them enable them to carry train across, aren't they, trains.
Yeah, roll on, roll off.
Yeah.
Most ports have roll on, roll off.
So that would fit in the model of a growing population and thinking long term.
Yeah.
This is just another example of a short term vision.
So despite all the rhetoric how a Labour was wasting money, blah blah blah, it's come almost the same, if not more.
And it's a waste of money too, and a lack of vision, and it's going to be, we will need to replace these with a growing population.
They wasted 140 million to get out of the previous contract.
Yeah, so it's just a waste of money.
Yeah.
They made a, and this is where we think the, she's pretty good as an investigative journalist,
right.
Andrea Vance, but some of these other idiots aren't. So why wouldn't these politicians put on the spot about this?
Yeah.
How much? Just compare the two deals and say, well, if we went with the IREX deal, well, that's a long-term vision thing.
It would eventually would have paid it.
We'd have paid it, yeah, and it would have probably been sustainable for quite some time until another sort of rethink some years or centuries down the track.
Well, these ones that the government are buying are smaller than the ones that Labour have proposed, aren't they?
Oh, yeah, they are, yeah. And then
they probably won't be fit for purpose.
There was a ferry that broke down recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just no long-term vision.
Yeah.
They're only just thinking for the near and now, and it comes back to that election cycle stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a humorous note, as we almost run out of time,
yep.
If you've got any complaints about your neighbours... loud and vigorous lovemaking of a night, you don't go to the tenancy tribunal because they consider it as part of everyday living.
Yes, it kind of reminded me of a few things I hear around in my job
late at night. Well, yeah,
but not this. Sort of stuff.
Right.
No, but things that are not within your scope.
That's a lovely way of putting
it. And this has got nothing to do with the Tennessee drive. I kind of find that kind of frivolous, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Why would you bring that up for?
Yeah, I mean, God.
Yeah, it's like trying to get involved in neighbour disputes and stuff like that. And that's a trap for any advocate. Well, you don't want to be caught in that, because we had a client who phoned up about the police in her street. I said, no, that's got nothing to do with me. And then I had this client who wanted me to complete their work and income benefit for them.
Yeah.
No, that's not my job. And was told so.
Right.
Yeah. People think they can just test.
Oh, spurious sort of.
Test the boundaries, you know, push it out a bit. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that brings us to a close. Yes, well, just a reminder, Fred is in Raglan waving the flag. And you can catch us either on www.freefm.org.nz or just check out the podcast.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.